Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the Die of Mischief.
And today we're going to be talking about a lot of fun topics while keeping you up on the latest in Harper's Island theories.
Talking about fun topics.
Yeah, it almost sounds like I said the same word twice there, but that's just because I don't enunciate things clearly.
Right, okay.
So I choose to not blame myself.
When in fact it is entirely your fault.
I am boldly not blaming myself. anyway.
First topic.
Okay, two weird things. Weird thing number one. Now, I know you know this, but I also have a blog in addition to doing these AVODs.
Yep.
Now, that blog, which I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is called Castle Vargelon, after the castle where the character Count Vargelon lives.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's where it comes from. Castle Vargelon, I have, you know, been doing it for a year, and, you know, not that long. It's a relatively new blog, and there's like, you know, 100 posts or whatever, lots of reviews of just crap, because that's, you know, the only thing that gives me... Apparently the only thing that gives me joy is to review crap. Now,
like so many of us, really.
And, okay, so I had two weird things happen fairly recently. Weird thing number one, you remember when the absolute first movie I ever reviewed was that god-awful zombie movie, The Forever Dead?
Yes!
You remember that?
I remember that because you kept giving me a hard time because I wouldn't read it all because I thought it was too long.
Yes, well, that is a popular opinion about my reviews. I'm not going to deny that. They are, in fact, too long. But anyway, now, obviously, I was going to continue doing, you know, reviews about that sort of thing. And the site took on a very different, you know, purpose after I saw the Indiana Jones movie. But now that I'm almost done writing about Indiana Jones, I'm going to be able to get back to writing about, you know, other things soon. But anyway, the woman who wrote The Forever Dead, I happen to, because I believe, and tell me if I'm wrong here, I'm a narcissist.
yes, very much so.
Sounds about right. I happened to search for the word, and I mean, I'm lucky I picked out Vargelon because I can search for that word on Google and only references to me come up. And one guy who seems to actually be named Brad Vargelon.
No way.
Yeah, I think that might be a lie I just told. Anyway, although it does often try to say that I misspelled the word Pardulon, which is a plastic resin used for making the boards that you play miniature board games on.
Really?
I know, right?
Oh.
Yeah, but no, it was not a typo. I meant Vargelon. Anyway, so with this, I happened to be searching for it, and the writer-director of that movie had, like, on some board where she talks with other, like, film people, complained about my really brutal review of her movie.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, it never occurred to me that you were going to read that.
That's like, unreal.
I know. Well, I assume
you Googled her movie and then
yeah, Googled her name, Googled her movie because I mentioned her in the review and my theory based on the film's awfulness that she specifically hated me.
See, this is why you should name people in your review.
Yeah, but it's like I don't think it's unethical to mention the name of the person who reviewed the movie. But I'm getting off topic. Anyway, I said, hey, I happen to hate the movie and the fact that you had a low budget isn't an excuse. But obviously it wasn't meant as an offense. You know, I'm not trying to offend anybody. It's just my opinion about your movie. And she took it all in good thing, and she offered to send me a copy of her new movie.
And
I know, and I'm like, totally send it to me. But I've been in Toronto in a while, and it just arrived there, and there was this whole thing where now I have to get it from Toronto. So there's a ridiculous ordeal involved in me seeing the movie. But I'm going to see it soon. So, like,
Toronto's not hard to get to.
I know, and I'm going, like, in 3 weeks, but it's just, it's...
Me too!
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah.
We'll totally hang out. But anyway, the point is, so I'm totally, like, getting my first ever thing sent to me to review.
Oh, that is so cool.
I mean, I know I've been getting video games sent to me for years to review, so it's not that big of a thing. But, you know, that was, you know, because
that's
I'm...
It's a big thing.
Yeah, it's because I... Yeah, no, it's because that's because I write for an established video game website. So it's not like they're sending me video games to review. They're sending the site video games to review, and I am the person who reviews them. But this, like, it's just... The only reason this thing is getting sent is because Count Vargelon reviewed a movie, and I think that's kind of neat.
Nobody sends me anything to review.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
That's so sad.
It's sad. But, and then...
What's even worse is that I'm jealous of you.
Really? What a terrible person to be jealous of.
I know. It's horrible. I hate it.
Makes me so sad for you. But anyway, no, it actually gets better because... And I mean, maybe this sounds crazy, but guess what?
What?
All right. Prepare to be excited.
Okay.
I got my first completely out of the blue mass mailing of horror sites with a guy trying to get people to review his horror comic book.
Really?
I got apparently included on someone's mass mailing of horror review sites.
Holy crap.
I know. And again, I don't know that many, I mean, I assume it's entirely because... As you know, I've never marketed the site except for the one time when I was really pissed off about that movie, Inside. And I basically went to everyone who had given Inside a good review, and I wrote each one of them a letter saying, "Hi, you're wrong. I have written an essay explaining why you are wrong. If you would like to read it, do, but know that you're wrong." And it's like, that's the tiny amount of marketing I did last March, but apparently that was enough to get me on this guy's list of horror movie sites that he wants to, you know, try to attention to his comic book. So I'm totally going to write him back and say, yeah, are you sending me a free copy of your comic book? Because if you want to, like, if you're sending me a link to something that I can buy, then no, I'm probably not going to review your comic book. But if you want to send me, like, a PDF of your comic book, like, I understand, I'm not expecting me to mail a finished comic book, obviously, but if you want to send me, like, a digital copy of it, of course I'll read it and review it. Although he will have to be warned that I normally give things terrible reviews, however good they are.
That is true.
You know, so, yeah. I mean, and that's nothing on him. I'm just one of those people who hates things.
Yeah.
And, you know, people and stuff. And time and whatnot. I did not come across very well in that explanation of me. But anyway, but the point is, I mean, I'm totally going to write him back and say, but I just think it's neat that I somehow got onto the list of people who, you know, who review things now. So
that is very cool.
Yeah, so between this one woman who, you know, sent me her new movie and apparently put in a character named after the critic who savaged her review, so that's nice. So they could be murdered. I'm like,
oh,
I know. Well, it's another zombie movie, so, you know, I'm just happy to be included. Anyway.
You don't care how.
I don't care, you know. I mean, I'm sorry, there's a guy who's trying to make a vampire movie where, you know, one of my friends who's a director is going to make a vampire movie, and I convinced him to name one of the vampires Count Vargelon. So I just want that out there, you know? I don't have to be involved.
Wow.
If a guy shows up for,
really is the height of narcissism.
It is the height of narcissism.
I can't even say the word.
Yeah,
envy. The raging jealousy inside of me is preventing me from articulating myself properly.
Well, I'm sure we can get a dive mistress into something. But anyway.
Sounds dirty.
Yeah, that really did not come across as innocent as I had hoped. I can't deny that did not go well. Anyway. So that is my bloggy news. So that's fun. I also have, and I mean, this is going to sound weird, but because I think, you know, I'm obsessed with this. I also have Batman news.
All right. I like Batman. All girls do.
I know all girls like Batman. That was the That was the cornerstone true observation I made about, you know, comic book people. It's like, you know, yeah, basically it's a dude crowd, except for girls who come in to buy manga and Batman, because all girls love Batman.
I think I told you that, actually, and then you ran with it.
That might have been it. But anyway, I am so excited, because as you know, I review video games, and there's a new Batman video game coming out.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if it's any good. I don't care if it's any good. I'm going to comment on it the same way I reviewed Mortal Kombat versus DC. It may be an awful game, but it's an awful game in which you are allowed to play as Batman, and that's enough.
See, when you told me earlier that you had Batman news for the show, I got excited because I like Batman. Batman's cool, but that is just about a video game.
Okay.
I feel a little let down. I'm a little anticlimactic, I have to say.
But it's not like it's a fighting game or something. It's one of those sneaky around being Batman, beating people up games. The concept is that the Joker has escaped, is being taken to Arkham Asylum, and then he takes it over, and Batman has to beat up a lot of people. A lot of mental patients who, I am sure some of them just need medication.
But see, I'm not a big gamer. In spite of your best efforts, I am not a big gamer.
And dear Lord, have I tried to get you.
I know, and I'm sure it'll happen again real soon.
Oh, it totally will. I have like 8 games lined up that the second you're in town, you've got to see. But no, I totally get that. But at the same time, this is Batman, and it answers the question, what if the comic book Arkham Asylum wasn't unbearably pretentious?
I liked Arkham Asylum.
I know, because you're unbearably pretentious.
Only a little.
Okay, not unbearably.
Be fair, I am bearably pretentious.
Yes, your pretension is completely bearable.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyway, with less, intellectual wanking and more, I assume, Batman brutally beating people up. That's the video game. So even you might be able to enjoy that. I'm going to try and get a review copy, but if I can't get a review copy, it might be something I would actually buy because, Batman.
Yeah.
And I never buy video games.
That's true.
I only ever get free video games or pay $5 for a used video game, but I might actually be willing to buy something featuring Batman. Although I did not buy the Mortal Kombat game. That was a review copy. I knew it was going to be
about it.
No, I knew it was going to be awful. Like, I knew it was going to be terrible. There was no way it could be good. And it was even worse than I had imagined.
Oh, that's bad.
I hated it. Well, I'm sorry. And I know this is a crazy thing to think, but like, what's the point of having a Mortal Kombat game if Batman can't, if you can't kill people?
It's right there in the title.
Exactly.
Mortal Kombat.
Do DC versus Street Fighter, or do DC versus Dragon Ball for all I care. Just, if it's Mortal Kombat, you gotta let me kill people, even if I'm playing as Superman, okay? You just frigging have to. Alright. So,
I would totally kill a guy if it came down to it, I'm sure.
Of course he would. He might.
Max, there's an episode of JLU where he does kill a guy.
Really? Which one?
It's the one where it's like alternate universe JLU.
Oh, yeah.
They're all evil. They're corrupted by power.
Yeah, I didn't actually see that they had become corrupt.
And the Flash dies.
The weird part is, it was sad that that Luthor killed the Flash to make that happen, but when I saw the world of the Justice Lord, I'm like, I'm not sure what's bad about this, what's supposed to be bad about this world. Like, there's no crime, everyone has a job, there seems to be no repression, social repression of any kind. Everyone has food. What was
Everyone's afraid to step out of line, lest the Justice Lords come down on them.
Yeah, but everyone is afraid to commit crimes. But it's like no one is oppressed.
It's not even that. No, it's not even that. It snowballs. You're afraid to commit a crime, so all crime stops.
Yeah.
And then the Justice Lords don't really have anything to enforce, so they start enforcing lesser crimes and the misdemeanors, and it gets to the point where you say the wrong thing, or you're out on the street at the wrong time of day, and the Justice Lords are going to come and get you. So you're sort of living in this world of paranoia and fear where anything you say and do could end you up in jail.
Except that we didn't really see anybody in the episode getting put in jail for saying the wrong thing. Like, that theoretically could happen, but I didn't actually see them throwing anyone in jail for having an unpopular opinion.
But that's what they alluded to, because you saw people in the streets who were afraid of the Justice Lords when they saw them, you know, flying in the sky or whatever.
Yeah, I would rather live in that world than the world where people are, you know, burning down orphanages and raping children and the Joker is still alive.
Okay, nobody burned down any orphanages or raped any children in regular Justice League universe.
Okay.
You're going a little far.
Yeah, I know, but Lex Luthor killed a lot of people, you know? All right. So we're not here to talk about the Justice Lords.
Unfortunately.
Sadly, we are not here to talk about the Justice Lords. We are here to talk about Harper's Island. And I gotta say, this week... Yeah, we are avoiding the recap this week. This week there will be no recapping.
I've been fired from recapping Harper's Island, so we'll dispense with the summary and just move right on to the critique.
Yeah, so from now on the Harper's Island recaps, we're going to be assuming that either you've seen the episode or you've read Castle Vargelon's, you know, elaborate write-up of each week's episode. So, spoiler alert, we're going to be talking in detail about the episode starting now, so if you haven't seen it, this will spoil the episode for you.
So, I gotta say,
yeah.
I was less irritated with this episode, but really? More irritated in some ways, too. Yeah.
Okay.
It really, like, yeah, I really swung between the two extremes there.
Okay.
One extreme just being slightly less irritated than normal.
That is, I gotta say, slightly less irritated than normal does not fit the definition of the word extreme.
I think it's impossible for me to be completely satisfied with the show. So,
that's true. Yeah.
You know what? Take what you can get.
I know. I mean, I'm normally the one who hates things for no reason. So I know where you're coming from.
I have a reason.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No good reason.
Oh, hey.
Oh.
Good thing we're not keeping score.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. Okay, so no. Let me just say, for my personal tastes on this episode, I thought, you know, less plot movement forward. You know, it was completely obvious who was going to get killed this week. Not a surprise at all. I had so completely seen that, you know, that character who we'll get to was a red herring that I'm not surprised he was totally dismissed this week as a suspect. So we got that going for it. But what was your, like, what were the two polar ends that you were feeling this week?
Oh, well, I got really pissed off because everybody was doing everything wrong. Everybody was making the wrong decision about everything. Okay.
I'm going to need some kind of a specific to have the slightest idea what you're talking about.
Well, because, like, you know, I couldn't get, you know, all the terribleness into the synopsis. Now I got to get terribleness into the critique.
Oh, okay.
incomprehensible ramblings.
Yes, there are.
People were presented with an opportunity to sort of choose between two options in last week's episode.
Right.
And at every turn, everybody was making the wrong decision.
Okay.
Like, Henry was given a notice, like a little card with a note on it by the hotel staff. And he looks at it and he's not too pleased with what's written on the card.
Yeah.
And his fiance, whose name I keep forgetting.
Hunter?
No, Henry's fiance.
Oh, Henry's fiance, Trish.
Trish, thank you. Trish asks him, is there anything wrong? He's like, no, everything's fine. Clearly it isn't.
Yeah.
Like, what? You know, you're the worst married, or soon-to-be-married couple ever. You're already keeping secrets from each other.
Oh, absolutely.
And then he, like, tests her to see if she's really in love with him.
Yep.
By, like, you know, concocting this elaborate plot to pretend that he's Hunter and to send her a note, come and see me and we'll work this out. And she decides at the last minute that no, she really does love Henry, and Henry is vindicated because he's chosen her. Like, it's just, well, so unnecessary.
I don't know that it's, like,
Which is fucking talk to one another.
I know it's a dickish thing to do.
We could have dispensed with the hunter subplot at the very beginning. And maybe we could have used that time to move the story forward. Yeah,
the story did not move forward very much. And I understand it was a dickish thing for him to do, but I think, you know, because she was cheating on him with Hunter before, like, he wants to find out whether she's doing that again. Like, because they have that backstory where she was cheating on him with Hunter and then she left him for Hunter temporarily, but then Hunter is, of course, a dirtbag, so she came back to Henry.
Yeah, but if she had if the two of them had just talked about this earlier and had been honest with each other and she said Hunter's on the island, then it wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah, I think she was, it's on some level, it's not like she totally decided she was going to, you know, wasn't going to do something with Hunter, because she kept and as I pointed out in my recap, she kept going to see Hunter and then going back and having sex with her fiancé. Like, that's a really creepy, screwed up thing to do. Like, she did that twice in 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, made out with Hunter and then went ahead and had sex with Henry. Like, that was, ew. You know? So, she's not blameless in this. And, yeah, he did an over-elaborate, you know, soap opera kind of thing. But because it's heightened melodrama, I didn't really have a problem with that. More interesting is the fact that I think your whole thing that John Wakefield was framed is completely true.
Yeah.
Like, they seem to be suggesting that that's what happened.
Well, it's so odd because Kelly's given an autopsy and her eyes are super red, which is actually kind of creepy.
Yeah, that was a really disgusting effect.
And so the sheriff sort of goes about his business investigating her death. He doesn't believe that she killed herself.
Yeah.
But this is sort of another elaborate plot cooked up by somebody to get someone else to do what they want. And it's just sort of needlessly complicated. So Kelly's got these red eyes. And the sheriff goes back to her house and starts poking around. And he sees this little cat, and it's got bright red eyes. And the cat is sitting on top of a box. So the sheriff looks in the box. And then in the box, he finds a newspaper clipping from the Wakefield murder 7 years ago. And his photos in the clipping and his eyes have been colored in with red pen. And it says something to the effect of, I'm back and I'm going to prove myself or something, or like, I'm coming to get you. Like, oh, you're next. I think it was
can you find me or something like that.
Yeah. Something along those lines,
something serial killer movie.
Right. So it's like, that's really, you know what, this guy's going to like some serious lengths to deliver his message.
Yes.
Cause it involves knowing exactly what this person's going to do at a particular time of day. Like, I don't know.
Okay, now I'm trying to figure out exactly what your complaint about this is, because it's like, the whole idea
it's too complicated. It's overly complicated. Unnecessarily.
But the thing is, he knew the killer. Okay, I know, I'm not denying that it's unnecessarily complicated, but at the same time, the killer specifically injected her eyes with red ink to turn them red, like red pen ink, so that, like, he would know it was a suspicious murder and investigate further. Yeah, the whole idea of, you know, and then there was a cat with red eyes covering a box that has a picture of him in it. Yeah, okay, that's...
Yeah, okay, like, that's what I'm saying. It's just too much.
I know, but it's like, when you start complaining, I mean, normally, hey, I'm halfway through the...
Your message. You don't really need to go to such great lengths.
Yeah, you could just leave a note. There's no reason to just not leave a note. But anyway, I think this, like, how do I put this? Yes, and I'm going to admit that this is the exact stuff I bitch about in my reviews of terrible show Criminal Minds. But the thing is, Criminal Minds purports to be a somewhat based in reality version of serial killers, Whereas this is clearly a slasher movie. So, yeah, it's heightened, you know, Silence of the Lambs, ridiculous serial killer rules.
You don't get that kind of crap in a slasher movie. There's no time for it. And this is another issue with the show.
No, and by slasher, you know, I said slasher movie, but I mean, you know, I mean slasher novels, the kind of stuff that James Patterson writes with ridiculous theatrical serial killers who leave rebuses pointing to their next clue. Like, that's... It's really a James Patterson and his 50 acolytes kind of thing.
But like you said earlier, you know, the story really isn't moving forward. We're not
fast
going
enough.
Anywhere.
I don't understand how they're going to stay this out for 11 days.
3 days away.
I know.
Filming, it's been a day, a week on this show.
I know. So, like, yeah, I really thought that each episode was going to take place over a smaller amount of time, because I honestly can't figure out, like, in 3 days, they're going to know Marty's missing, they're going to know, although they may have framed...
These are the worst people ever! This girl doesn't realize that one of her best friends...
Has disappeared.
Bridal party.
Yeah.
Has disappeared.
I know, I don't understand, like, I assumed they were going to do a thing where they left a note saying she had gone to... you know, visit her boyfriend or something, you know, when they established that her boyfriend didn't come to the wedding. But then they didn't do that, and just no one mentioned that Lucy was gone. That was my big problem with this week's episode. And I love that I'm arguing against your nitpicking, but my girlfriend watching the episode accused me of nitpicking for asking why didn't anyone notice that Lucy was missing.
Thing. It's terrible writing sometimes.
Oh, no, it really is. Yeah, especially because it's like, instead of moving the plot forward, this is all about the, you know, war of anger between douchey frat boy and likable British guy.
Okay, I have to say, though, I really did enjoy Clive's revenge.
Do you mean Cal?
Cal. I want to call him Clive.
Because he's British.
People with C names have to be called Clive.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Cal. Cal's revenge on
was great.
That was really funny.
It
was.
That
was a good moment. And yeah. I'm glad it was in there. I liked that part. That made me laugh.
Yeah, I was very entertained. Because that scumbaggy guy just cannot get killed fast enough.
But that good moment, that moment of brightness is
offset
is offset by the horrible near incest that's going on
in the
Wellington family,
the twisted S&M relationship between Trish's brother-in-law and the trophy wife of her dad.
Mother, it's so
creepy.
Appalling and unnecessary.
I know. And I mean, like, from the moment, and I've been wondering for, like, when is Richard going to get a line? You know, he hasn't said anything. And then this episode, he starts complaining about Thomas, and I'm like, oh, so you're sleeping with the trophy wife. And then they go beyond sleeping with the trophy wife to creepy S&M power games with the trophy wife.
Yeah, they've got this weird sex game they like to play.
Yeah, they really leapfrogged.
So don't need to know.
Yeah, they really leapfrogged right past, you know, just sleeping together. Ew.
So, yeah. And then, okay, but I, you know, it's been a few days since I've seen the episode, and I've had just time to process. And I decided on the whole, I actually didn't hate this episode as much as
thank
I hated the
God.
Other two.
Oh,
I know. And mostly has to do with the fact that they tied up the Kelly knot.
They did.
Kelly wasn't killed by JD issue.
Yeah.
And it did create a little bit of tension because I was sort of worried that.
Maybe he was and JD was the killer the first time. We don't know.
Maybe. Who knows? But I'm glad
the only thing we know this episode is that Shane
JD.
Is not. Yeah.
So Shane went after JD and tried to kill him, and then was rescued by Abby and her father. So that put that to bed, and I'm, you know, I got tense watching it, and I'm glad that, you know, that whole thing is finished now, and
absolutely.
Maybe we can move forward with some other more important things.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I know the show in no way has the guts to do what I'm about to suggest that it does, but how fantastic would it be if, you know how it, every episode opens with her doing a little monologue about the island, right? If almost Psycho style. Like, you know how there's, how I always point out when I'm analyzing slasher films, there's, you know, the two phases of every slasher film, which is stalk and then siege. You know, like, so there's the point where they don't know there's a killer running around. And then the second they find out there's a killer running around, it's an entirely different kind of movie and everyone's just running around yelling, right?
That's not really a siege.
Well, no, but you know what I mean?
Siege,
like,
is
it's
when
a,
they're all holed up inside the house.
It's not a literal description of what's happening. I'm just talking about the kind of film we're talking about, okay?
Running around yelling.
And you'll notice the most slasher films are, you know, 80% stalk, 20% siege, because it's hard to keep the siege part going while explaining why they can't just get away, you know?
Right.
And that's going to be, by the way, Harper's Island's biggest problem, explaining why they can't just get away.
Find a way to get rid of all the boats on the island, which we saw a lot of last
week. Down at the marina this week, there was 16 boats at one dock. And we know there's more than one dock because that was not the main dock. But anyway, you could take a log back to Washington State. But anyway, the point I was getting at was, I know the show doesn't have the guts to do this, but how amazing would it be if the show, like, made the murder that tripped off everyone knowing there was a killer running around was having Abby get killed off in like episode 7 or 8, and then have the next 5 episodes be a completely different kind of show.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be incredible?
That would be incredible, but that isn't going
to
happen.
Yeah, they completely do not have the guts to do that. I know that they don't, but you know, I can dream. I can dream of a better show than Harper's Island.
No, if you're going to dream, why not dream big?
That's all I'm saying.
But, okay, here's something.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what we talked about in the first episode.
Yeah.
When Uncle Marty gets killed on the bridge.
Yeah.
So at the end of last week's episode, Hunter is sailing away from the island. And the boat engine dies, so he lifts up the engine hood and gets shot with a shotgun, meaning that someone had gone to great lengths to set up this particular kill a long time ago. Also, Hunter has just so happened to have chosen Uncle Marty's boat, because Uncle Marty's bag of cash is sitting in the boat.
Was that Uncle Marty's boat, or was that planted there by somebody?
Uncle Marty's bag of cash.
No. I thought that might have been planted there by the killer to frame Hunter for Uncle Marty's murder.
What? No way. That's way too elaborate.
That is way too elaborate.
No, Hunter took a boat to get off the island. It happened to be the boat that Uncle Marty was going to take. Meaning that someone had it in for Uncle Marty because they set up this elaborate shotgun rig to fire when the engine died.
No, but they couldn't have been aimed at Uncle Marty because Uncle Marty's been gone for X amount of time, and that was the shotgun from that morning's skeet shooting festivities.
That could have been any shotgun.
No, there was a nameplate on it that's identified it as belonging to that hotel.
Yeah, but all the guests are staying at the hotel.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that shotgun was accounted for 8 hours before the murder. So, like, Uncle Marty's been dead for 2 days, and the killer knows that, unless we're dealing with so many killers on the island that Uncle Marty's boat was rigged by someone who doesn't know he's dead.
See, I just took it to be that boat was rigged to kill Uncle Marty at some other point, but Uncle Marty bought it.
Okay.
In the first episode.
Yeah, but I've got to say that I'm pretty sure they were implying that the shotgun, by showing the little nameplate on the shotgun, that was the same shotgun they had been using that morning to skeet shoot.
Well, if that's the case.
Yes.
If that's the case, then who would know that Hunter's going to take that particular boat off the island?
Because, and I want to point this out, like, the killer has, like, Hunter's body is clearly meant to be found here. Like, it's not like the killer could possibly, he could arrange for Hunter to die that way, but he couldn't ensure that he would be able to, like, get rid of the body, or that someone else wouldn't see it happen or find it first.
How could he arrange for Hunter to take that boat?
No, my theory is that that is Hunter's boat. That's his boat, that's how he got to the island, and the money was planted there for some reason we don't know yet.
Again,
we had very different readings of this episode's death, obviously.
Either if you're right or if I'm right, it still is
really convoluted. I know. And I look forward to hearing how they explain it, because I gotta say, like, clearly the rest of the murders so far have been covered up, but this murder was clearly either intended to be discovered right away, or the killer is not worried about the discovery. For some reason.
Who's going to benefit from having Hunter found dead?
The father, because he'll frame Henry for doing it to break up the wedding.
Oh, God. It just, again.
Okay, I know that's
too much.
I know. I may be overthinking the mystery. It's entirely possible. But it's like, the father still wants the wedding broken up, and what better way to do it than to frame Henry for murder? No, can't have a wedding if the groom's in jail.
Oh, my God. But that would mean that the father had some dealing with Uncle Marty, because that was Uncle Marty's bag of cash.
Yes, that, or after he killed Uncle Marty and he was cleaning out his room, he found the bag of cash and was going to use it to frame Hunter for Uncle Marty's murder.
Marty is flying off the father with a bag of cash to let Henry marry Trish.
That could have been it too. You know, like, there's all sorts of things that were going on there.
Ridiculous. Okay. Possibility.
I know there are, we know that the killer, here's the thing. Here's how we know that that bag was planted there and that it wasn't Uncle Marty's boat. The gun was in the bag.
Uncle Marty's gun.
Yes. Uncle Marty had the gun with him when he was murdered.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm right. The killer did plant that bag and that gun in Hunter's boat.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Ha! Okay, I don't know why I'm gloating on such a pathetic thing, but apparently this is my life.
Very nice.
But you admit that I'm totally right about this now, right?
Yeah. I was wrong. I made a mistake.
Okay, folks, for the continued handicapping of the show, that was Hunter's boat. Hunter was clearly the intended target, which means the killer had to be someone who, A, knew Hunter was there, and B, had something against Hunter, wanted to frame Henry, wanted to frame the dad. Like, there had to be a reason for it, because, and this is my theory for next week, the killer also needs the body to be found. Here's why
that
I still
means,
like...
That means there's two killers.
There could easily be two killers.
Like, it makes no sense for John Wakefield, whoever he may be,
to be doing this. Yeah.
To be doing this. This has nothing to do with Wakefield.
Ah, you're forgetting something. What if the original Wakefield murders had been a way of covering up something that one of the rich people did on the island, like an illegitimate child or something like that? Like, what if it turns out that Abby is Thomas, is secretly Thomas, Thomas Wellington's love child with the sheriff's wife? Something like that. You know, what if... What if the Wakefield murders were just a way of covering that up?
I think that might be going a little too far.
I'm just saying, it could all be part of the same scheme. It could be.
I don't know.
Just like I'm sure that Kelly was murdered because in her seeing, air quotes, John Wakefield around town, even though she was interpreting something that was really happening crazily, she actually saw something important that no one could risk her sharing with anyone. Imagining a much better mystery than the show is going to give us?
I think you are.
Okay. Okay, but you know what? I'm getting enough enjoyment out of the show that even if the actual show isn't as good as the show that I'm watching in my head as I'm watching it, I don't care. I'm having a good time.
Oh my God.
Okay.
I'm just waiting for that, you know, things to pick up, for people to start to notice, first of all, that people are, in fact, dying
everywhere. Yeah. I'm not going to deny that that can't happen fast enough.
I don't understand how nobody's noticed that Doggirl is missing, the priest is dead. Come on, people.
I know. I'm not going to deny that that would be nice, okay? You're right, and we'll see next week. And well, the thing is, the rehearsal dinner, the priest is supposed to be at the rehearsal dinner, which is, like, next episode. So when the priest doesn't show up for that, they've got to notice something is wrong. So I can't...
Oh, we saw a creepy little girl was in this episode again.
Oh, and by the way, I thought about...
Tearing flowers out of the flower bed.
I know, because she's creepy. By the way, I'm going back to still being nervous about Jimmy, and I'll tell you why. Because creepy, I just realized creepy little girl talked about having a new friend that told her creepy things about murders on the island. And I'm like, yeah. Well, then it doesn't have to be a ghost. It can just be someone she doesn't know. And she doesn't know, you know, Jimmy. Of course, then again, creepy little girl could have just been talking about Chloe, who's a messed up chick who's obsessed with serial killers.
Exactly. It could be anybody.
Yeah. So I'm still 100% sure they're not going ghost.
Like Danny Phantom.
Nice.
No Danny Phantoms in this one?
No. I gotta say, I am still, like, 100% secure in my love of this show. I don't care. And I'm keeping my prediction about Jimmy going this week. Like, I'm still really nervous about that Jimmy guy. Although, like, so now that Shane has been dismissed as a possibility, they are really going whole hog to try and point the finger at Thomas.
Yeah, I think that's just too easy, though.
Yeah, I know. Like, they're so blatantly pointing the finger at Thomas, I think it's got to be the new red herring.
Yeah. Well... there's always going to be another one.
Yeah.
You know, there's like 17 of them.
Okay, so yeah. It was a good week of Harper's Island, a mixed bag for you, an out-and-out good week for me. They dismissed the most obvious red herring, and the way they kind of dismissed JD has actually turned me around and made me more suspicious of him, so... Kind of weird how I respond to these shows. But anyway, I think we all had a great time, and we're looking forward to this Friday's episode. So this Thursday's episode.
Thursday, yeah. I think Wakefield, again, might have been a patsy, and now could be.
But you're not willing to go as far as I am in that all of the murders are exactly tied together.
Well, no, I think Hunter might be... something else, because it doesn't fit. If we just have a killer on the island who, you know, be him Wakefield or be him somebody else, it still doesn't make sense for him to go after Hunter like that.
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't fit, you know, the MO, if you want to call it that, of Wakefield.
Yeah. Like I said, I honestly don't think we're going to be able to come up with any, like, really good theories until we know more about the character Ben.
I was going to say, until the story moves forward.
And that is the place it has to move forward to, letting us know who Ben was and why he was the first one murdered.
If he's really dead. No, he's really dead.
Well, no, he's probably really... Okay, the thing is, I was actually going to pull the, here's something I bet you didn't think about it. We've never seen a picture of Ben, so how do we know that guy was him? And then I got the pilot script off of the internet, and it says... cousin Ben is tied to a propeller and chopped into pieces. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, according to the script, that was him. Although rather retardedly in the script, and this, I'm so glad this didn't make it into the episode. In the script, it's like, you know, they keep calling Ben and his phone lights up, but he can't reach it because he's tied up underwater, kept alive by the regulator in his mouth. And they actually called a regulator. So good. But,
what?
But I'm like, yeah, his phone would not be working underwater, jackass. Like, it's nice that you know that's called a regulator, but apparently you don't know how a phone works.
Well, you know.
But hey.
You get a little.
They fixed it for the show. They fixed it for the show, and that's what counts. And wow, was the Chloe tramping it up with Uncle Marty much more obvious in the... the pilot, but weirdly in the script, and this because it's an early draft, Uncle Marty then finds some local woman to run off with when he gets shut down by Chloe.
Ah.
And he and the local woman get it off in the, get it off. Get it on. Have it off is the British one. Get it on is the American one.
There you go.
Apparently, have it off in the woods right before he gets murdered. So there you go. Anyway, but yeah, fun script. So let's move on. Harper's Island, an interesting week. And I think we're going to learn a lot of interesting new things this next episode. Like, I've a really good feeling now that the sheriff knows for a fact that quote unquote John Wakefield is definitely back, you know, or someone like John Wakefield or whoever the actual original killer was or whatever is back. I think it's going to start moving faster.
Unless it is the sheriff.
Yeah, I don't think the sheriff would have left all of those retarded notes for himself and then looked so worried when he found it. Like, this is not the movie Perfect Stranger.
Yeah, I guess there goes that idea.
Oh my God, do I hope this is not the movie Perfect Stranger.
Well, now you just ruined Perfect Stranger. Thanks a lot.
I actually ruined that last time in our trailer discussion.
Oh, yeah.
You've already forgotten that, so good work.
I have.
Okay. So you saw one of my favorite John Carpenter movies.
I did, yes.
To sip right along.
Prince of Darkness, which is next on the list in the John Carpenter project.
Yeah.
I didn't know this movie existed until I started working on this thing.
Okay.
And you, surprisingly, kept your mouth shut.
I did.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's so unlike me.
I know. Weird. Anyway, this movie is weird.
I know. Like, when I started thinking about it, I'm like, is this the movie that guy was talking about? Like, is this when he went nuts, according to that guy?
Well, see, here's the thing, okay? This movie was made, you know, coming out of the terrible depression that is Starman. So maybe, I think any movie made after Starman might just be completely off the wall. Because,
yeah,
just in comparison to Starman.
Oh, before you start synopsizing the movie.
And it is.
Okay. But, before you start synopsizing the movie, I'm just going to tell you that here's my history with Prince of Darkness. In a weird thing to have a childhood obsession with, I found its poster art with the house and the face in smoke creepy as hell when doing a paper mache project in grade 4 or 3 or 2. Like, whatever grade I was in when it came out. Like, we were doing paper mache, and part of the newspaper that I was working with was this captivating, like, horrible poster for Prince of Darkness that was, like, a full quarter page of an ad. And so I would not see it for years later, but I gotta say, the first time I saw this movie on video in high school, like, it creeped me the hell out in the middle of the afternoon watching it with other people. That's how creepy it might be his just creepiest movie.
It is. It creeped me out too. It's a creepy film.
And like, I've worried that I'll go back to it and it won't be as creepy this time. But now hearing that you had the same reaction to it, I'm like, maybe it's just a really good movie.
Yeah. Give me a moment to collect my thoughts. Okay, start with a synopsis.
Yes.
So, Donald Pleasance plays this priest who discovers the Brotherhood of the Sleeper, which is a secret fraternity whose sole purpose is to guard this relic that is being kept underneath a church in L.A. So he finds the diary of the last guardian, who's now dead, and sort of reads through it, and then goes to a university to enlist the help of a physics professor,
Victor Wong, from Big Trouble in Little China,
also in Tremors.
Yes,
and Victor Wong gets a group of students together, and they all head off to the church to spend the weekend there to figure out what this relic is, this antique thing in the basement. And they're going to conduct a whole bunch of different kinds of tests on it to sort of figure out what this thing is, because Donald Pleasance really has no idea what he's dealing with. And he's actually kind of appalled that, A, this thing exists, and B, that it has been kept secret from the Vatican for all these years. And sort of among the strange things that he finds in the basement is this large tome, which was, you know, written centuries ago, and basically chronicles sort of the detailed life of this thing in relation to Jesus Christ. And so one of the students who's at the church over the weekend, her job is to translate this book, which is written in various different languages. And over the years, people have tried to erase passages.
And I want to point out, like, people always point to In the Mouth of Madness, right? But this is by far his most Lovecraft-inspired movie. Like,
yes.
Because Lovecraft never talks about Jesus, people don't make the connection with this. But this is Lovecraft meets Christian mythology, and this is his, by far, like, the tome he finds is clearly just the Necronomicon.
Actually, it's not.
Well, I'm just saying it serves the purpose. It's not literally the Necronomicon. I'm saying it serves that purpose in the story. It's a stand-in. That's what I mean.
Okay, the book detailing the life and times of Jesus Christ. Well, actually, that's not. Well, it's sort of
Jesus Christ Monster Hunter.
Jesus Christ Monster Hunter. It's like there's this moment in the film where the girl who's doing the translation tells everybody what she's learned reading this book.
Yeah.
And it's one brief moment, but it's so fantastic, and it's such a brilliant origin story for the Antichrist that I'm surprised no one else has picked up on this.
I know.
Basically, the Antichrist has existed on Earth since, you know, Earth began, basically. Has been around for millions and millions of years, long before Jesus Christ showed up on the scene. And came from the skies. It's an alien being, sort of human-like, but not human, and is pure evil. And Jesus knew about this thing, learned about it, and started telling people to be careful of it. And people thought he was completely off his nut. Like, this guy was spouting madness. But he was also talking all these other good things that people, you know, they'll get on that train, but, you know, they're going to...
The stuff about the alien Antichrist.
But the alien, they're just not going to ride in the alien Antichrist car.
Yeah.
On Jesus' train. So Jesus' message about...
Peace, love, and understanding.
Peace, love, and understanding. That's good, but everyone just sort of ignored the alien Antichrist thing, so nobody knew about it.
And all that was left is, like, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the fake Necronomicon, the tome of the Antichrist.
It's just so wonderful.
It's amazing.
Stuff like that. So this movie, even though it's sort of, you got religion on one side and science on the other.
Yeah.
It kind of, you as the audience are sort of, you're meant to side with science, with the physicists.
Yeah.
But because the film is sort of built around this religious ideology, you come down on the side of religion in some aspects.
I know. And it also helps that Donald Pleasance is goddamn fantastic in the movie.
Yeah. And the two of them, him and Victor Wong, have a number of philosophical conversations about sort of the nature of good and evil in life and reality and sort of realms of imagination, realms of possibility and stuff. So it's actually like the philosophy that kind of underlines the story is actually kind of interesting, because it's sort of like, well, you know, what is real and what is not, and what can we accept on faith, and what do we need science for? And throughout the movie, they're questioning why now? Why have they discovered this thing now? And sort of they decide that, well, maybe now they have the technology available to them that they can understand the sleeper. The sleeper is what this thing is in the basement, this relic. But the real kicker at the end of the movie is...
Wait, hold on. I think you might actually not want to, like, this is a movie that not a lot of people have seen. I think you might not want, like, we haven't actually spoiled the whole second half of the movie at this point, and I don't think you should.
Okay.
Because this is the thing that I've avoided telling you. If it weren't for Halloween being a perfect movie that created my love of slasher films, and it weren't for, you know, The Thing being my top five favorite movies, this would be my favorite John Carpenter movie. That's how much I love this movie.
It is. It is. Okay, it's a fantastic movie, and I'll hold off giving away
the
what
big
exactly is happening.
Amazing ending.
But the end is so wonderful.
Yeah.
And it was so, I got really on edge. I was really tense watching it. And then at the end, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
I know. And my question is, I have not done any research. Did you do any research for this? Like, how did the public react to this movie?
I have no idea.
Because I want to find out why this isn't thought of as, like, if not, because it's not The Thing. I know it's not The Thing, but it's his second best movie, you know? Like, I think Halloween is nearly perfect, but I don't think it's his best movie because it's not. What I'm saying is Halloween is basically perfect for what it does, but it sets out to accomplish very little and it executes it perfectly, right? Whereas this movie, it sets out to do a huge amount of stuff and executes, like, 90% of it perfectly, you know?
Yeah. Well, this movie, again, like I said, it sort of, it came after Starman, which was just terrible. So possibly it didn't garner a huge react, like a big following or big reaction because Starman wasn't that wonderful.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm speculating here. I actually don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I mean, it's a bit, the movie is slow.
It is. I'm not going to deny that.
And it's not like he's certainly overcome the pacing problems he had earlier on in his career, but just the story is a bit slow. I mean, it sort of takes time for things to happen. And Carpenter is just, he's never in a rush to tell the story anyway.
No, that's one of the things I like about him as a story, so as like a writer director.
It requires a fair bit of patience on the part of the audience. So there's a chance that too might've been a factor. Also, you know what? Some films just fly beneath the radar.
Like, I guess I can totally get why it didn't have an audience at the time, right?
Although Alice Cooper is in it.
I know! So. Has a great cameo! And by the way, and I'm going to tell you a fun thing that is not a spoiler, but, and just when you, home viewers, see the movie, think about this comment I'm about to make, because I want to hear the Dive Mistress's thoughts on it too. When the one piece of press I remember it when it came out was, and I watched like Entertainment Tonight religiously at the time, was it's like, new John Carpenter horror movie controversial. Homeless advocates groups think that it's prejudiced against the homeless.
What?
I know, right?
It sounds like they're trying to manufacture controversy.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Now I think back and I'm like, were they trying to make up a controversy for this movie to help market it?
No, there's nothing. There's
I know.
Controversial or demeaning.
No, not
or insulting about homeless people. Okay, the homeless people sort of. Okay, like in Assault on Precinct 13, the people in the police station are being sieged. Or health siege? Being I'm not sure how to
besieged
use the word.
By.
Or besieged. Thank you. Besieged by a street gang.
Yeah.
In this film, the people inside the church are besieged by a group of homeless people who are all under the influence of the sleeper.
Yeah. And led by Alice Cooper.
Led by Alice Cooper. It really, like, that's it. I mean,
the homeless people are mind controlled by evil. Like, what is that saying against the homeless? But anyway, this film, I get why it wasn't a hit at the time, right? I get that. What I don't understand is why has the nerd community, the horror community, the critical community not since rallied around it as an example of some of his finest work?
I don't know. I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't. It's, well, what is interesting, I'll tell you something. When I was watching this film, the first time, something else that happens, which I neglected to mention.
Okay.
The people inside the church, they all eventually start having the same dream. when they fall asleep. And this is actually, this is really important for this, the plot of the film.
Don't you dare tell the home viewers what the dream means.
I'm not going to tell them what the dream means or what's in the dream, but there's an audio track to the dream. And when I first saw it and heard, well, when I first heard it, it rang so familiar, and it was really, really bothering me that I have heard this before.
Seriously?
Yeah. So, and I had an idea of what it might be, where I heard this. So when the film ended, I went through my music library. And the audio that plays during people's dream is found at the very last 2 or 1 minute of Stem Long Stem by DJ Shadow, which is a 9 minute long song.
Okay, so someone sampled it?
So DJ Shadow
sampled this Carpenter track.
The Carpenter track, but it actually doesn't feature in the song at all. It's just the very last few seconds of the track is this Carpenter audio.
Jesus, I love, can I just say, I love him as a writer, I love him as a director, I love him most as a composer.
As a composer.
I really do.
His music is usually like the sort of really minimalist synthy kind of stuff that he does, but it's good. It's effective. I mean, the movie creeped the hell out of both of us, so.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like, never in my life, except for this movie, maybe I'm overselling this, but you had the same experience. Never in my life have I been just full-on, oh my god, creeped out by a movie at 3 in the afternoon watching with other people. Okay,
I'll admit, I watched it, you know,
later at night,
10 o'clock with the lights off by myself, so. Yeah.
I know, I'm not saying everyone's going to have the same experience that I did, but it really was that creepy to me.
Yeah.
And I got to say, as a Lovecraft guy, seeing, you know, one of, it really is one of my favorite Lovecraftian things ever, because it's not Lovecraft at all. You know, it's not.
Except for that one sort of, you know, sidebar, P.S. Antichrist is an alien.
I know, which, that's pretty Lovecraft right there. I mean, that's, like, Lovecraft never really got there, but that's, you know, he would have.
Well, no, Lovecraft wasn't writing about, you know,
Judeo-Christian
morality.
I know.
Okay, he was, you know, coming at it from a completely different angle. And I read an awful lot of Lovecraft, and I'm a really big fan.
I know, but.
And I guess if you want to make you sort of going on the Lovecraft connection, so this kind of, the creepiness and uncertainty and just total weirdness that Lovecraft breeds, that is present in this film, even though it's not essentially a Lovecraft movie.
Yeah, it is Lovecraftian, but an entirely original story.
Yeah,
it's good. in a way that I got to say, the more like I liked In the Mouth of Madness, like I didn't like In the Mouth of Madness first time I saw it, then it grew on me. But now, after, you know, thinking more about Prince of Darkness, I'm like, no, it's not his most Lovecrafty film, you know, and that's so like. He did so much better working with the themes and ideas of Lovecraft in this than he did with Michael DeLuca's script, which actually, you know, more literally attempted to talk about the old ones in In the Mouth of Madness. But you know what? Let's table that until we actually get
there. Yeah,
because that's only like five movies away, so it's not like it's going to be that long.
But yeah, but getting back to Prince of Darkness, I didn't know anything about this movie going in.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had no idea what to expect. And I watched it and sort of in my head, I'm like, man, this movie is weird and it's really creepy too at times. It's just totally bizarre.
Yeah.
I gave it 3.5. So we're right in the middle of the weirdness.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
It's a pretty crazy movie.
Yeah.
Because it comes completely out of nowhere. You don't know what it's about going in. And the deeper you get into it, the more layers of craziness this movie has.
Yes.
I cannot say enough good about this movie. And I advise everyone who hasn't seen it to see it as quickly as they can.
Yes.
Okay,
I just wish I could talk about the ending, but
you
can't
talk about the ending.
I know, I'm not gonna, but
you know what, actually, I think that, like, let's give our audience, you know, let's give the home viewers time to watch the movie, and when we get back to Lovecraft for In the Mouth of Madness, I think then it'll be fair game to talk about the ending of this movie.
Okay? Yeah.
So, in like 6 weeks, we can come back to a bit of a longer conversation about the amazing ending of the movie, Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Okay. And yeah, got Alice Cooper, not Ozzy Osbourne. So how weird is that?
I know. I know.
Okay.
I made a comment about that in my post about the movie.
I have not read the text piece yet. But do you know what? Oh, and what's next on the John Carpenter Fest?
That's a really good question.
I know. I just thought you would want to announce it.
Oh, I actually don't know.
It's They Live!
Yay! I've been waiting for this one because I love this movie.
Okay, so look for a They Live party very soon on the AVOD. But anyway, here is a movie that we can talk about the ending of, and a movie that I have read your write-up of.
And I'm assuming you disagree with me.
Oh, no. Of the movie we're about to talk about?
Yes.
No, I agree with you about that. Oh my god, do I agree with you about the movie we are about to discuss. So why don't you introduce it to people?
Okay. We're going to talk about the movie Skinwalkers. Which, I don't know why you're laughing.
Because I laughed so much throughout this movie.
Oh, sorry. But it's not a comedy.
No, it is not. It is not a comedy.
Okay. Skinwalkers came out a few years ago. It is a werewolf movie. I don't watch a lot of werewolf movies, generally. Not that I don't like werewolves. I just don't watch a lot of werewolf movies. So we had family movie night. And my roommate, one of my roommates, he came home with Skinwalkers. And he'd seen it before and he really liked it. So we sat down to watch.
Wait. He liked the movie Skinwalkers?
Yes.
Okay. Please continue. I wanted to get that on record.
I liked the movie Skinwalkers.
I know you did.
But anyway, basically, there's all werewolves have this, you know, this curse on them. And it's been prophesied. I can't use words today. It's been prophesied that, you know, there will be this boy who can end the curse. And so there are good werewolves and bad werewolves. And good werewolves live in peace and harmony with the community, and they lock themselves up during the full moon. The bad werewolves have fully given in to their animal side. And they don't want the curse to end. And the good werewolves are all for having this curse lifted. So now the good werewolves know who the boy is, know where the boy is, and are doing their very best to keep him safe until his 13th birthday, because once he turns 13, then he can lift the curse, only nobody knows exactly what he's supposed to do. So the bad werewolves want to find out where the boy is, and basically most of the movie is just good werewolves and boy on the run from bad werewolves until there's a final showdown. And good wins, good triumphs over evil, as it always does, and we find out that the cure to werewolf dumb kind curse is in the boy's blood, and so if a werewolf is injected with the boy's blood, the curse is lifted and he's no longer a werewolf anymore.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked the movie.
You liked the movie. Yes. No, you're right. I did have different feelings than you did about the movie.
So basically what you're saying is that you lied to me.
I did lie to you. I'm sorry. I did. I didn't want you to think I was horrible for hating a movie you loved. But yes, it is a terrible.
You hate a lot of movies I love.
Dude, this was so bad.
I liked it.
Oh my god. It was, and the thing is, it's like, I didn't argue with the premise. I didn't argue with the idea. I just thought, how dumb is this movie? And I'm like, I'm going to tell you something, guys, and maybe I'm wrong here, because, like, what I hate is that they try to do science werewolves, which is the stupidest thing you can do, right? Well, like, to take away the magical aspect of the werewolves. Because I'm going to right now do something the film didn't do. I'm going to fix a huge plot problem in the movie, okay? On the night of his 13th birthday, the boy has to be at a certain place to get the power to cure werewolves. There. I have solved the film's biggest plot hole. because the entire movie has these characters struggling to escape from the bad werewolves, when escaping from the bad werewolves should be the easiest thing in the damn world.
Why would that be easy?
I'll tell you why. Because you have a truck and two humans on your side, which means you can drive away from the bad werewolves 24 hours a day. The bad werewolves, every night, have to stop for 10 hours to wolf out and kill people and can't drive their frigging motorcycles. So, after the first night of you fleeing, you can have a 1,200-kilometer lead on the bad werewolves. And they would have no idea which direction you went in, even with a magical hawk that is never explained helping them out.
But I think they do drive through all the night one night, and then they're beset by a number of different problems that forces them to slow down.
Yeah, no. The thing is, like, the first problem is that they have to go to the hospital. And so I get why they had to slow down for that. But the second problem, oh my god, that whole scene where one of the good werewolves gets turned into a bad werewolf, and they act like, oh my god, like it's this horrible thing about, oh no, you'll have to kill her, but I can't kill my girlfriend, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know, you can shoot her in the leg, because in exactly 9 hours... you're all going to have the power to not be werewolves anymore. So even if she's a bad werewolf now, shoot her in the leg, tie her up. In 9 hours, she'll be cured and that whole evil thing will go away. Like, they act like so much. Or, oh, here's another plan. The second you have to run away, just get the kid on a plane. Bad werewolves can't fly. Okay? Get him on a plane to anywhere. And all of these plot problems would have been solved had they just had to be in a specific place for the magical lunar alignment to work. But they didn't think of that, so it's just like gaping plot hole at the center of the movie that it should not be this hard to get away from the bad werewolves.
See, I didn't really have a problem with the movie.
Okay.
I liked it. I thought it was, because, you know, it's like, it's just, basically it's just a regular versus movie, which is a category I just made up. Good versus bad. Okay. Yeah. And you have good werewolves versus bad werewolves.
Yes.
All right. And so if you have that kind of versus movie, then you can't introduce plot devices like get on a plane and fly out of there, because then you're just eliminating the threat entirely and you've got a completely different movie on your hands.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I get that, but at the same time, I'm like, sort of it just requires slightly better writing. You know?
But just the sort of conventions of this kind of, you know, versus subgenre.
Yeah.
Then you need to introduce an element into your good guys that causes a kind of, you know, inner strife among the group. So not only do you have, like, the intergroup conflict, you have an intragroup conflict as well. To
be
more suspense. That's what I said.
No, you said her twice.
I said inter, and then I said intra.
Wow, do you not enunciate well? I thought I was the one who was bad at that.
Regardless, you have both kinds of conflict.
Yes, you have the two kinds of conflict.
So again, like, I'm willing to forgive the film. You know, it's various
plot stuff.
Plot stuff, if you want to call it that. For the
Which apparently I do.
You know, I thought it delivered. It's a competent, well-made werewolf movie.
Okay. I have another problem with the werewolf movie.
All right. Is it the werewolves themselves? You didn't like how they looked?
No, I was fine with it. I was fine with, dude, it's furry shirtless people. I don't care. Although the chick werewolf remained disturbingly non-shirtless for some reason. Like, what was up with that?
Oh, anyway. She had her bra on.
I know, but I'm like, what?
But she wore
kill
her bra
you to
all the time.
I know, but I'm just saying, it's going to kill you to have a topless werewolf in this movie? Come on.
Maybe it is.
She was fine being topless for getting it on with Jason Bear later in the film, so it's like,
but did you actually see her boobs?
I don't remember that well. I was not paying that as close attention as I probably should have. But anyway... The point I was getting at is that the other problem I had with the movie was that I'm like, so basically, you good werewolves, like, you're not kidnapping this kid, okay? You're not holding him for ransom. Why are you sending around a videotape that gives away part of the kid's location to other werewolves when you, like, when you're at war with other the bad werewolves, and all you need to do is keep this kid protected. And more to the point, if you've spent the past 13 years with one responsibility, and that responsibility is to keep, like, this one kid werewolf from getting killed, you should have a better plan for defending your town than everyone has a gun in their pocket.
I love that part. That was hilarious.
Yeah, except that's exactly what they were parodying in the movie Hot Fuzz.
Also, love that movie. Everyone's got a gun.
Yeah, but in Hot Fuzz, it was a parody of this terrible movie.
Okay, first of all, you don't know Hot Fuzz is a parody of Skinwalkers.
Number two,
Skinwalkers came out after Hot Fuzz.
I don't mean it's a parody, literally, they meant to parody this movie. I'm saying that's how it ends up being, because they were making, you know, this hilarious joke, which is supposed to be serious and cool in this movie.
No, I thought it was pretty funny. I didn't take it as being serious or cool. That was just funny.
I think you were misreading the intent of the filmmakers.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
I still liked it. It was effective.
Okay.
It evoked an emotional response to what a movie is supposed to do.
Okay. The emotional response that it evoked in me is, I can't believe they don't have a better plan for all of the denizens of town to defeat just 4 werewolves.
I couldn't believe that everyone was such a bad shot.
I know! Oh my god!
I'm like, really? Come on.
Yeah.
But, okay, your comment about, you know, keeping the kids safe. First of all, they didn't know that they were giving away anything to the kids' location.
Because yep.
It appeared, like, in a reflection in the background.
And seriously, who has a jacket with the name of your town written on the back of your jacket?
Nobody does. If that were, like, the local team...
It would have been one.
All right.
The fact that it was the name of the town was just ridiculous.
I'll admit, that was a bit lame.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the reason for sort of circulating the videotape to the other good werewolf communities is probably an effort to ensure that, you know, this kid is alive and is safe, and they are, you know, if they can just hang on for a few more days, there will be an end to this curse that plagues them. So...
Yeah, but I mean, had we gotten, I guess that would have been more necessary, I think, had there been any sign that there was strife in the good werewolf community, but everyone seemed perfectly happy waiting. You know, I thought the videotape was a bit contrived and they could have come up with something else. Just like at the beginning, I loved the guy who apparently has never burned paper in his life. Because he's trying to destroy some maps. So he rolls up the maps really tight and puts a lighter to them. And I'm like, those will never burn.
Hey, look, not everybody sets things on fire like you do all the
time. Yeah, but he's like, he's a native scout. He's never built a fire.
He's not a native scout.
Well, he's wearing a ridiculous ruffled jacket and his job is to keep... werewolves safe in the woods.
Just because he's native, you think he can build a fire?
Actually, yeah. I'm okay, here is the possibly racist, please viewers tell me if I'm being racist, thing I'm going to say today. Every native guy who lives 9 months out of the year in the woods knows how to build a fire. There, I've said it. If that's racist...
You don't know anything about that person. You don't know he lives 9 months out of the year in the woods.
Actually,
they call him Guardian.
I know he's the caretaker of the group of werewolves who lives out there in the woods in their tiny little underground hut that we saw. So obviously he lives out there with them.
No, he doesn't.
Yes.
He wasn't their guardian. That's somebody else.
He was their caretaker. He was referred to as their caretaker.
Not their caretaker, just a caretaker.
Oh my
God.
You just
see him running through the woods away from bad werewolves. You don't know where this guy is, where he's been, or where he's going.
Well, he's running through a field of all the dead werewolves who he was protecting. Who's his job to protect? Because the bad werewolves actually taunt him with the fact that he doesn't have a job anymore, because all of his werewolf charges are dead.
Doesn't mean you live in the woods. It just means it's to go where they go and lock themselves up at
night. I'm just saying, I am predicting that this character spends enough time in the woods that he should have known how to start a fire, and how are we even debating this?
You brought it up.
And you could have just said, yes, that was silly. But no, you got to debate every little thing. But anyway.
Shut up.
Anyway, the most important thing is Kim Coates is in this movie, and I'm just happy whenever Kim Coates is in a movie.
Really?
Yeah, I love that guy. He's fantastic. He's so entertaining. He didn't have much to do in this movie, but I was still damn entertained. And of course, also Elias Koteas, or as some people call him, I can't believe it's not Chris Maloney.
Casey Jones.
Casey Jones from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Yeah, was in this, and he was fantastic.
See?
Yeah.
See?
No, he was actually very good. And, I mean, I had all sorts of plot stuff about the movie, but, yeah, you're right, it was a fun and competent werewolf movie. I just thought there was a lot of stupid stuff that was easily fixable and that I would have liked to see fixed. But that's... But overall, I could see how you can totally shut your mind off to that and just enjoy the heck out of Skinwalkers. I just think this is a film that could have been fixed with an easy rewrite, all of the problems with it, you know, and I feel like laziness led to them not doing that. And do I ascribe some of that laziness to a filmmaker whose work that we're not especially fond of? Yes, I do. Because... this film was directed by a little someone named Jim Isaac, whose previous film was a little something called Jason X.
Well, we can argue that he has learned from the numerous mistakes made on Jason X, managed to pare it down some.
Yes.
And come up with Skinwalkers.
And I'll give you this, Skinwalkers is a much better movie.
You know, and so I'm promised for the future. So if he sort of keeps going at the same pace.
Yes. In 20 years, he might make a legitimately good movie.
Crap. Maybe eventually we'll get to a good film. I'm not saying that The Skinwalkers is by no means a perfect film.
Or even a very good movie.
I enjoyed it. For what it was, I enjoyed it.
You can totally have a good time with the movie Skinwalkers.
Caught up in the story and I like the movie. I'm not going to watch it every night before I go to bed. I have other movies for that.
Or ever again.
Or probably ever again. but for what it's worth, I liked it. I don't see that many werewolf movies, so...
Yeah. No. And hey, I'm right with you. There's not a lot of good werewolf movies. I'm not going to lie and say there are a lot of good werewolf movies out there. It's a very weak genre. I mean, when the best people can point to is god awful movie Dog Soldiers, then yeah, it's a genre with.
Oh, I like that one too.
Oh God, we're gonna have to do a show about Dog Soldiers now.
No, I think we're just never going to have to do another show about werewolves.
That would work.
I clearly
disagree on what makes good. All right. Well, for me, it starts and ends with The Howling and American Werewolf in London. There. Okay.
American Werewolf in London is fantastic.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that movie.
No.
Okay.
I've never seen The Howling.
Anyway, but the weirdest thing is, so I get through this, to my feeling, profoundly stupid movie, Skinwalkers. And the end credits come up, and I guess I hadn't really even paid attention, right? Because it gets to, like, directed by Jim Isaac, written by, and I'm like, was this written by the guy from Psych? I'm like, yeah, this was written by the guy from Psych. How strange is that? Like, isn't that bizarre and random?
I don't know.
I just found it very strange that the guys from Psych wrote the movie Skinwalkers.
I don't think that's so strange. Why does a writer have to stick with one kind of thing?
No, the star of Psych.
Oh, the star.
Yes.
The writer. Oh.
No, not the writer.
Again, I don't think that's so strange.
Okay. Well, I know he likes horror movies because he did a Friday the 13th themed episode that he co-wrote with the creator of Psych. So don't get me wrong. Like, I know that he likes horror movies, but I just found it a little weird. Not you?
No.
You're totally fine with that? You accept it? No questions?
Yes.
No? Okay.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Are you done? Are you finished?
Are you?
Belittling me?
Oh, man. Oh, and by the way, everybody, head by Castle Vargelon, because this week, my competing review of the film Skinwalkers will be going up, where I make some very different points than the Dive Mistress did.
And probably a lot longer, too.
It may actually be a few thousand words to her, a few hundred. But
I have brevity on my side.
And I have completeness on my side.
Shut up.
Oh!
No, that is true.
It's completely true. Anyway, I think that's it for this week's show. I guess we are going to see you back here next time for more Harper's Island. And whatever we're talking about the next week, I accidentally closed the document where that information is, so I can't tell you what next week's topic is right now.
It's a surprise.
But in addition to Harper's Island, I'm sure we'll have something fun to talk about. Since a certain dive mistress knows they live pretty well, we're probably going to be covering that in addition to our other topics.
Yeah, most likely.
But until then, thank you for watching. I am, everything is available. Count Bargelon stuff is available at bargelon.blogspot.com, which is the web address of Castle Bargelon.
You can read the Dive Mistress's contribution to horror culture at zombot.blogspot.com and zamborks.blogspot.com. You can always send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. And from the Dive Mistress, anyway, this is goodnight. I don't know if the cat's got anything more he wants to say.
No, I think you said enough. It. Oh, my God. All right, until next time. Until next time, everybody.